Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we are rolling with the Believe You Me podcast. Take two for today, because we did have the great Tom Aspinall, the surging heavyweight who's headlining UFC London on July 23rd. He came on. Sadly, we had a little bit of difficulties, but it's probably for the best because we allowed Harrison to throw some topics at him and Tom was not impressed. Either he was really pissed off with Harrington's questions or there was a lag, and there was a lag, but like we asked him one question and like he just looked and we're like, oh, he didn't like that one. Harrington, how you doing, buddy?
I threw one story at him and all of a sudden he's like,
it's
not working. I can't hear you.
I'm like, yeah, that's what he does to my brain every week. Literally that noise is what's going on.
Great, Michael. It's episode 400.
Oh, shit, it is 400. You shouldn't have said that. I wanted to make 400 on the Monday with Anthony Smith, but I guess he's not here.
We would have just lied and said this was 399A?
Well, I don't know if people follow it. I mean, I didn't even know it was 400. How many people out there?
It's right there in the title underneath this, BYM number 400. It's you can't really hide that.
No, well, fair enough. I guess that's how numbers work, one after the other.
We'll do a 401 episode spectacular on Monday.
Oh, and it will be spectacular. Harrington, we got fights this weekend. We got breaking stories in the world of mixed martial arts. What do you want to start with?
Oh, I mean, obviously, the Pope.
The Pope. What the is Pope. Going on with the Pope, please?
So the Pope was doing a tour of Mexico recently, and, you know, it was in, you know, either Spanish or Italian. I'm not really sure, but he was explaining, you know, some healthcare regimens that he goes through. And one of them, he like reached up, grabbed his knee and then did the sign of, you know, taking a shot, just said tequila, which is, you know, and people are it's going viral as people are, you know, taking it to mean that the Pope is telling you that adequate pain relief medication is a shot of tequila.
Well, it is. It is. I don't know if you've had several shots. Oh, yeah. Let's take a look. Let's take a look. Here he is in Mexico.
Yeah, the Pope is just cracking jokes. He's a cool Pope.
Yeah, well, I would be if I lived in the Vatican, an entire city that was one of the richest places in the bloody world. And the what is it called? The Vatican was my home. Have you ever been to the Vatican? I'm assuming the answer is no.
It isn't.
I have not.
Actual palace.
Oh, no. I've been there. We had a private tour, Rebecca and I, after my Anderson Silva fight. Oh, my God. Oh, I mean, it's so impressive. It is unbelievable. It's nice to know that the Vatican, that the Pope, pardon me, is he's going to shit face on a bit of tequila. Why not? It does help the pain, Harrington. You don't drink, but if I was to kick you in the leg very, very hard, do you think a shot of tequila would help you?
I mean, it certainly couldn't hurt worse than a kick to the leg from Michael Bisping.
I can't really kick these days. I've got no bloody knees. We threw that story to Tom before. And what was Tom's response?
Tom said that, you know, he can relate because he at one point had a torn bicep muscle and, you know, 2 or 3 pines deep, you know, the arm would just come out of the sling that he had it in and just start swinging arms around you know, after a couple of drinks. So, yeah, he agrees too.
You do silly things when you're drunk, unfortunately. Yeah, but, you know, my level of consuming alcohol has dropped significantly. So I wouldn't know about these things. What else we got, Harrington, before we get into some of the hard-hitting news?
Check this out. This guy has been eating at McDonald's. Take a guess for how long. You know, if you could say in a row, how many days in a row do you think is too long?
I mean, I'll be honest. I don't eat a lot of McDonald's. And if I had it once, because it's kind of gross. When I was younger, I loved it. I don't know if McDonald's has gone downhill or my expectations has gone up. Do you know what I mean? Or I'll be honest, don't take this the wrong way. Is McDonald's best? And by the way, what is with the McDonald's? So on the last show, McDonald's has been banned from Russia. So now we talk of McDonald's every fucking show.
McDonald's Mike goes to the McDonald's subreddit for stories for here.
Yeah, yeah. Stay off the McDonald's subreddit, okay?
We had this conversation at your house.
Oh my God.
And you gave me a bunch of shit for saying that I love McDonald's.
Do you love McDonald's, Brian?
I do occasionally enjoy McDonald's.
Oh, hold on. When you say my house, you're talking my house?
Yeah, at your house.
Oh, I thought you meant Harrington's house.
No, get the fuck out of here.
No, Brian's not allowed in my home.
No, it's disgusting. It's gross. But go on, continue. How many days?
So it's not a week. It's not a month. Not a year. 50 years in a row. This guy has not missed a day of Big Macs.
And is he absolutely gigantic?
Way less so than you'd think.
Oh, yeah, there he is. Look at that. I mean, listen, just leave that up there, Brian. Let's just look at this guy. Zoom in on him if you can.
Is he this blue?
Well, there's something going on. What is that haircut? This guy looks like Mr. Spock. He's dressed like Mr. Spock. He's tucking into that Big Mac. Can you imagine eating Big Macs every day for 50 years? What would come out of your backside? I mean, that is just disgusting. Oh, I mean, God.
It's rough enough as is. I couldn't imagine adding in, you know, I mean, maybe a body just gets used to it and can figure out how to, like, get all the nutrients out of it. But I mean, I have to imagine that guy's toilet has not seen peace in the last half a century.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Because, you know, when you eat bad, you know, what comes out the other end kind of reflects it. They say you are what you eat, you know, and it's true. It is. It is. But okay.
That guy does kind of look like a Big Mac, like with the hair like that. It's like a bun.
He looks like a fucking weirdo is what he looks like. What else we got, Harrison? Come on. Redeem yourself.
Okay, how about this? You know, I don't know if you've heard, Mike, the you know, real estate prices are going absolutely through the roof.
Are we having an intellectual discussion regarding this current housing climate and real estate prices?
No, we're talking about one man's solution to it. See, he started by living out of his car and just turned his car into a house. And it turns out like a used Chevy Impala is a lot cheaper than just buying a plot of land.
Well, let's take a look, because until I see a picture, I can't give any kind of input on this. But still, hey, top marks for creativity. Prices are going ballistic. It's just insane because people can't keep up with this. I mean, we know inflation is bloody wild right now, assuming that comes down. But the property market, rent, cost of living, it's been shooting up for years and years and years. Doesn't seem like it's going to slow down anytime soon. So if you're, I'm going to say, if you're just an average man that's working an average job, you're not going to be able to afford to buy a house. That said, I would not recommend this.
Wow. I mean, I don't see why not. I mean, he's got metal framing.
I see that he's got a little air conditioning vent going on the side. That's got to be a joke. There's no way that's real. He's not driving around with that. And what are these things at the top? Are they bikes?
It seems like it. Yeah, he's got a whole bike rack up there. He's got to store his bicycles. But this guy claims that every single thing on this house is like it's functioning and it works. So, you know, I have to imagine that air conditioner is functional.
Let me ask you, does the guy that owns this house, does he eat Big Macs every single day? And in this toilet, in this house, is there a functioning toilet? Because
I'm going to go ahead and doubt that there's indoor plumbing in essentially a treehouse on top of a sedan. But no, I don't think look, if this guy was eating a Big Mac a day, you know, he could probably, if he was eating that cheaply, I'm sure he could afford, you know, a real house.
So. Yeah. Well, I'm sure we can afford a real conversation. So at this point here, we're going to move away. Harrington, on the notes which you have compiled, what would you say is the most juicy story? It's not Paul Felder finishing first in a triathlon. Congrats, Paul Felder. That's awesome. Turning his talents to the world of triathlons. But still, we're not here to discuss that. What have we got? Is it Khabib and Tony Ferguson both being open to coaching the Ultimate Fighter, you think?
The whole thing is Khabib, right? That is pretty much every big news story I could throw at you for today involves Khabib. So if that's the one you want to start on, that makes a hell of a lot of sense to me.
I mean, he's one of the biggest stars. I did see that story about Khabib and Tony. So what was the background on it?
So, you know, Tony Ferguson, I think he went on like Ariel Helwani or one of those programs. And he was talking about, you know, essentially the fact that he never got to fight Khabib, how that was, you know, like that was always kind of like a sore spot to him. And he felt like he could never, like, you know, Tony's been very gracious with Charles Oliveira and back and forth since they, you know, eventually got there. They got, you know, they got done fighting each other. Like, you can kind of bury the hatchet there. And he was just lamenting that he never got that like exchange with Khabib. Yeah. So his idea is like he would like to do something like The Ultimate Fighter where they can still compete against each other. Right. Like, I have a team, you have a team. We do all these like little mini challenges against each other. And he seems interested in that.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I think that would get a lot of people watching it because the coaches don't always have to fight. There's been a couple. I can't think right
McGregor,
now. Hold on.
Faber.
McGregor and Faber. There's one. There was also the comeback season when it was Matt Hughes. Who was the other coach on that season 4? They did the comebacks. Oh, it was George St. Pierre and Matt Hughes, right? Was it? Was it?
Yeah.
I think it was. Yeah, it was George St. Pierre and Matt Hughes. Oh, did they? They did fight, though. They did fight.
I believe.
And then Matt Serra won the entire thing and then fought George St. Pierre and shockingly knocked him out in the first round. But anyway, back to the point. Yeah, you don't always have to fight one another. And Khabib said, yes, brother, no problem. I coach The Ultimate Fighter. Call your boss is what he said. Mm-hmm. You know what? I think that would do great numbers. I think people just can't get enough of Khabib. You know what I mean? And he's not going to fight again. He's not going to fight again, but just seeing him coach on The Ultimate Fighter, because Khabib's a funny guy. He is. Obviously, the way that he talks, he's got a very, very dry sense of humor. And then you combine it with the accent. He's funny. He is funny. He's got a good sense of humor. Obviously, a tremendous amount of knowledge to pass down to any young fighters. So that would be great. Yeah, I think so. Also, Khabib this week was talking shit about Charles Oliveira, wasn't he? And also saying, what was he saying about Oliveira? Saying that he's the champ, but only kind of the champ. You got the exact quote there?
Yeah. If Charles wins against Islam, we have to give him credit. Then he's going to be undisputed UFC lightweight champion. Right now, I believe he's champion. I believe even people talk about this half pound. I believe he deserves it right now. In this moment, he deserves to be champion. He's doing a very good job, you know, but he's not undisputed. When I finished, I was undisputed.
Well, what does he mean by undisputed? If you're the champion, you are the undisputed champ, Brian.
Yeah. Does that mean that Khabib says there's never going to be a champion again?
Yeah.
Like no, a I mean, real champ.
I mean, Khabib's going to say that, of course, because he retired undefeated. You know, and all he's doing really, I think he's just trying to discredit him because his boy's Islam Makhachev. You know what I'm saying? And they're trying to get that fight. And he did say that if they were to fight, that Islam would ride him like a donkey. Did you see that?
Yeah. It was me. Now it would become Islam. This is like Father told. He say, last 10 years, best lightweights in the world. This is my students. This is how Father told. When Khabib going to finish, Islam going to come. Okay, if they want it in Brazil, we're going to come to Brazil, Rio de Janeiro, Sao Paulo, no problem. We're going to finish Charles in his own game on the ground on Brazilian land. We're going to teach all the fans what is top control, how we finish people. We are going to get the belt and go back. We're going to take some big hugs from Brazilian fans. They're going to love Islam's ground game.
Yes, but brother, you should have did it in this accent. That would have made this segment of podcast much better. Because Father say, we go down to Brazil, we take big belt. We take some Brazilian hugs and maybe some bitches, and then we go home. Very good time. Of course, Khabib's going to say that. Of course, he's coaching Islam. So, of course, he's bloody confident in his boy. And to be honest, Islam's got a really good chance of beating him, let's be honest. I mean, if you were to pick a winner right now, who would it be? Because for me, I think I'd pick Islam. I would. People knock Charles down, they don't follow him down to the ground. But Islam would follow him down for sure. Islam would be able to take him down. And the reason I say that is because Charles's takedown defense, I'm not saying it's bad, but he doesn't have to keep it super on point because people do not shoot on Charles Oliveira. You know, it's just a bad idea. So therefore, if you don't use those tools, they're going to diminish a little bit. They're not going to be sharp. You're going to keep those tools sharp. And Islam on the ground is incredible as well. So I don't know. It's disrespectful to the champ to say that. I'm just saying that Islam could be the one, though, to dethrone him.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a ton of sense. But for the same reason, I always wanted to see prime Tony Ferguson fight Khabib. I would love to see Oliveira, because you're right. Islam will not be afraid. But I definitely think there is a world which Charles Oliveira can submit Islam Makhachev from the bottom. I think there's a world in which he can, you know, counter the Sambos and get, you know, counter that Sambo style and get a sweep and end up in top position, which is not a position I've ever seen. You know, I've never seen Islam Makhachev from the bottom needing to work his way back. So it's like, you know, I would pick Charles Oliveira in that fight. I would pick Charles Oliveira against any 155er on the planet right now, simply because I'm done with the business of doubting Charles Oliveira, right? And I think that's what Khabib was talking about with the undisputed thing, right? Because when Khabib left, he had beaten Poirier, he'd beaten Gaethje, he had beaten McGregor. There was no credible challenger for him at 155 at that point. So it became a thing where it's like, okay, now Chandler and Oliveira are going to fight as like the two next best guys. But I mean, nobody was sitting there when Khabib was retiring saying, oh yeah, Charles Oliveira, he's the man to beat Khabib for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And didn't Khabib say another thing as well? He said, you go down in all of your fights. You are constantly hitting the ground. And I understand what he's saying, because anytime you get dropped, it creates this what if kind of scenario. And Charles does get dropped, but that's what makes him so exciting. And the reason he gets dropped is because he's happy to go forward and just walk through whatever's being thrown at him to land his own shots. Not the smartest, but certainly adds for a bloody exciting fight. You know what I mean? Because, come on, last few times Charles has fought, it's been unreal. Chandler, who was it? Poirier, and then Gaethje. Got dropped in all of them. Got nearly finished in all of them, but did enough to come back. And that's Khabib's point, saying a true champion, brother, should not go like this. But I don't know. I like that. I like seeing fighters go through adversity. I like seeing them take the hard path, if you will. I mean, certainly as a fan, you want that. You're on your feet, you're applauding, you're going crazy. If you're the coach, you don't want that. But what do we think of this? Because I did see DC was in the news this week. He said, if Charles Oliveira beats Islam Makhachev, then Oliveira could be the one to lure Khabib out of retirement. And if what you said is true, well, you're not making it up. That quote, what he said, father's plan. You know, we're going to beat them all. We're going to prove that our style is the best. We're going to bring the belt back. You know, if there's a guy out there, Charles Oliveira, and he beats Islam, essentially what he's done is taken that reputation, because now Islam is the representation. He's their biggest name. He's their golden goose, whatever you want to call it. You know, he's the guy flying the flag. And if Charles can beat him, you never know. Khabib might take that a little bit personal and say, right, fuck this shit. This is number one bullshit. I got to get the gloves on. Mother, I'm very sorry, but father's plan. You know, wouldn't that be awesome? What a fucking storyline that would be. And oh my God, what a pay-per-view.
Well, you know, it's funny because there is precedence here. He did say the only way he would give Conor McGregor a rematch is if Conor came back and beat Islam. So, like, he's already kind of opened the door for
I didn't see that.
He said this probably 3-4 months ago, something like that. And it was kind of like an offhanded. The way I pictured it was like he was saying it as like it's such a far-fetched idea that Conor McGregor could beat Islam that, like, yeah, sure, that's how I would come back. Charles Oliveira, though, is a legitimate threat to Islam, so he's not talking like that. But I'm just saying that door has been opened, at least for Khabib publicly talking about it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, I guess Islam's probably going to get the next fight. I mean, obviously, there was that matchup with Beneil Dariush, right? That hasn't been made official yet. So Charles is going to fight someone. He's going to go in maybe as the young crown champion. You know, the belt's going to be vacant, but it's one side of it's going to be Charles. I don't know who the other side is going to be, but it could well be Islam Makhachev. Yeah.
Khabib is saying that he has been, like, he's been pestering Dana. He's been on Dana's case about it. He's been texting him. He's been, you know, everything he can to get Islam into this title fight with Charles Oliveira. And Dana, according to Khabib, for the first time, Dana has just ghosted him. He's left him on red.
So
maybe they're thinking of something different.
Maybe. Well, who would there be? And then we have this conversation. It seems that all the talk of the UFC these days centers around the lightweight division, but it really is got all the talking points. Chandler, no way. No, they're not going to do a rematch with Chandler. Who else? Poirier? No, Poirier's talking about fighting Colby Covington July 30th. Looks like that fight's going to take place. Who are the other contenders? Beneil Dariush? Can't imagine they would go for Beneil other than Islam. Just simply because Islam's got the star power right now. Who else is there in there? It's not going to be Conor because he's not fighting this year. I don't think so.
He's too big for the division right now, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a little bit too big for 155. That's for sure. That's for damn sure. Anyway, should we move off something to do with Islam Makhachev, Khabib, and Charles Oliveira?
Okay, if you insist.
No. I want to know about this. Well, no, it's about Khabib again. My God, I didn't see the end part. Number 10. The number one rapper on the British Billboard charts released a song about Khabib. A number one song in the UK is a rap song about Khabib.
Dude, it has over 12 million views, and it is by a gentleman by the name of Central C, who is a Billboard number one, a hip-hop artist, you know, from the UK. Yeah, he's considered the you know, at like on that level of like the, you know, Drakes and you know, Jake Cole and Kendrick Lamar of Britain.
Did you just say Jake Paul? You just mentioned Drake and Jake Paul in the same line.
No, Drake and Jake Cole.
Oh, sorry.
No, Jake Paul is not one of the US's best rappers.
Well, no, because Jake Paul does have some rap videos out, doesn't it? And I got to admit, he can spit some bars. And I thought you're going to say Drake and Jake Paul, but it was Jake Cole. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, Drake and Jake, you know, the new power duo in rap.
Yeah, exactly.
Would you? All right, so this is kind
of
interesting.
No. I've never heard of King C. Is it King C?
Central C.
Central C. Never heard of him in my life. I don't think he's the number one rapper out of the UK right now.
His videos are pretty popular, and this is his most popular.
Can we play that, Brian? Let's take a little look. Let's take a little listen. I want to hear it.
I don't say much, but I hear everything I said. It don't go over my head. Success is the best. But watch it's not what I'm good.
What's this got to do with Khabib?
No, it said the song is called Khabib, and, you know, in the chorus, he's like, I stay on top like Khabib.
Yeah, well. Wow.
UK rap sucks, dude. I'm sorry.
No. Let me tell you. No, UK rap doesn't suck. I'm just going to throw it out there. I'm sorry. That sucks. That was bad. Talking about putting two in the fucking head. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
He let God do it instead rather than put two in the head, bro. Yeah. No, that was a lot of shit. Sorry, Triple C or King C. What's his name again?
Central C. Oh, yeah, we got beef, BYM, Central C.
Central cunt is what the C stands for. I'm sorry, I'm just joking. It's great. It's awesome. I love it. Download that on Spotify right now. Big up yourself, bruv.
All right, Central C calls DJ Mikey B, opening in Manchester, packed house. Are you taking the flight?
I mean, just for shits and giggles, yes. Just Google, Brian, number one rapper out of the UK, because it is not Central C. It's got to be someone like Dizzy Rascal, Skepta. Skepta might be up there. I don't know. Maybe I'm showing my age. The Streets, well, I mean, they're good, but they've not been around for a long time. Biggest rapper in the UK. Do we have a list? Rapper, I'm doing it if no one else is fucking doing it.
I'm on it.
All right. Oh, my God. Times have changed. I don't know these people. Giggs, Akala, JME.
Oh, this
Little
guy,
Sims.
Dave, is pretty popular.
Who?
Dave.
Good old Dave.
He just goes by the name Dave. I saw he had like a packed house at Irving Plaza just a few weeks ago. There was a line like way around the block.
I'm looking at a list of the 25 most influential MCs that changed the game. Yeah, I'm just going to close that down. We're going to forget about that right now.
I got Stormzy and Dave at the top.
Oh, Stormzy. Stormzy's a big one. I don't know Dave, if I'm honest. Oh,
I don't see Central C anywhere on this. But he does have 12 million views, close to anyway, on that video.
Hey, and that's fantastic. Well done, Central C. Good for you, mate. Only joking. I'm not hating. All right, real quick, I want to tell you about Masterworks. If you are looking to invest and make some money and diversify your portfolio, then Masterworks might just be the platform for you. What it does, it allows you to invest in famous pieces of art. I mean, for example, if you look at the Mona Lisa, right? At one point, it was worth $30,000. Now it's worth $867 million. That is over 2,000,000% appreciation. Art always goes up in value. And with Masterworks, it allows you to invest and be a tiny little part owner. But as that piece of art appreciates in value, gets more expensive, well, guess what? Your investment is yielding returns. So check it out. It's a fun way to get involved in the art game. Maybe you know a lot about art already, or maybe you just want to take some of their advice and invest in something different, but something that's sure to go up in value. Go to masterworks.io. That is the website if you want to get involved. Use the promo code BELIEVE and see important regulation disclosures at masterworks.io/CD. Listen, it might not be for everyone, but it's certainly something different, and art always goes up in value. Simple as that. The older, the better. The older, the better, pretty much, the more expensive it's going to be. Get a little piece of it now. Get in there. Get a piece of the pie. Go to masterworks.io. Check it out. Good luck. All the best. Let's get back into it. What's this? Jake Paul was hit with a soda on his way to the tunnel after the Fury versus Joshua fight. Tell me more.
I got to give credit, all right? And this hurts me to say, right? It might hurt you even more to hear it. Dylan Danis posted this, and it's the one good contribution he's made to social media in the last year. As you can see, Jake Paul walking out of the arena and boom.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, I got a white shirt. Be really bad if anything. Oh, no.
Oh, dear. Oh, dude, that is hilarious. Oh, God. That is funny. Oh, I'm not going to stand there and hate on Jake Paul. You know what I mean? I don't want to do that, but come on. That's pretty funny. The only thing about him that just opens himself up to a little bit of ridicule is that he takes himself so seriously. Just relax a little bit, and maybe people won't be throwing bloody sodas at you or Pepsis or whatever the fuck it was. You know what I mean? Any word on who he's fighting? Because I know it came out recently, Jake's back August 1st. Was there ever an announcement?
No word yet. I mean, as far as I could tell, you know, a lot of the talk online centered around how Anderson Silva was going to look in that helicopter fight, like helicopter pad fight thing. So I think like a lot of the talk there was like, if Anderson Silva comes out of there looking like, you know, a lot of people were hoping if he came out looking like a killer, Jake would challenge him. Maybe if he like barely squeaked by, that's what Jake was looking for. I don't know. But
yeah,
I think that just got rescheduled. So we might have an answer soon.
Did we discuss that Logan Paul is suing Floyd Mayweather? Did we discuss that on this show?
No,
but apparently, just Google that, Brian, see some facts. Apparently, you know, Logan and Floyd had that exhibition match. We watched it at my house. And he said, yeah, he's been paid some of the money. He was expecting about $15 million, something like that. So he said, now I've got to go legal on him to get the rest of the cash. Apparently, people say that Floyd's broke. I can't see how that's the reality. The man's earned so much money. Granted, spends a lot. Flash lifestyle, private jets, cars, watches, you name it, and the rest. You know, no doubt a bunch of baby's mamas and taxis, and there's a lot of ways to spend money, but still, I find that him being broke a little hard to believe.
Well, I mean, you know, I personally, like, the limited, you know, interaction I've had with Floyd Mayweather, I saw him one time. He was driving, you know, right by the Barclays Center. He had just landed from a private jet and was in the middle of three like Hummers or like just big Escalades, right? That had the TMT, like the money team branding on the side of them, ready to go, right? And he had two guys on either side of him as he was in the middle seat. And I'm sure both of the two, you know, Escalades in front and back were also full of his entourage. So it's like, if you're to just come to New York for a press conference, you need to rent three different Escalades, have them, you know, tricked out, custom designed for you, have probably a 15.
Stop. No, what you're describing is not a way to go through hundreds of millions of dollars. Do you know what I mean? It's not. That's a big PR day, right? They're trying to put their best foot forward. You get three Escalades and you put a temporary wrap on them. You're talking a few grand. Tops. We're talking hundreds of millions of dollars. You know what I mean? Just because he's got three Escalades with the money team on it, that's not how he loses that kind of money. No way. I'm sorry.
I'm saying between taking the private jet there, taking the cars, and the amount of people who were on his staff for just that one interaction that I saw, probably a $150,000 to $200,000 day. And that's every day for this guy.
So no, I'll tell you where his money goes.
Millionaire.
He once dropped $6.5 million on two Bugattis just for fun. So,
yeah, that's what I'm talking about. It's stuff like that, Harrison. You're right. I mean, that is lavish and it is certainly a waste of money. But if you can afford it and it's creating hype and creating money, then maybe that was money well spent. But buying two Bugattis on the same day, spending $6 million, that's the type of behavior. Also flying all your friends around in private jets and buying crazy jewelry. buying houses. I mean, we hear about it all the time. You know, whose book was it? Hold on. Hold on. George Foreman. Was it George Foreman? Evander Holyfield. Evander Holyfield. Yeah, because he built this huge, crazy house in Atlanta. It had like 35 bedrooms. Brian, just bring up the exact specifics of that house. He built this house. And yeah, I think it was like 60 bedrooms, 40 bathrooms, something like that. I forget. I think by the end of it, when it was all said and done, just the upkeep on maintaining the house and the grounds was just an extraordinary amount of money every month. You know, it's wild that, no disrespect, I mean, Evander Holyfield's an absolute legend, but it's wild that people like that, with that kind of economic background, spend crazy money on houses like that. You know what I mean? I don't know how much that house cost. Brian, did you manage to find anything?
Yeah, I put it up because somebody's gardening outside. That is a very annoying sound.
It's quite all right, but that, what did you find, buddy? I don't hear it.
So the house is 44,234 square feet, has 109 rooms, including a 135-seat theater, a bowling alley, and a dining room that accommodates 100 people.
Yeah, that sounds amazing, doesn't it? But it also sounds very, very expensive. But still, anyway.
Who has that many people they want in their home?
Tell me about it.
You got 100 people in your dining room. You got 130 in your movie theater. You got 15 people bowling. Like, who has that many friends?
The swimming pool. Do you know what I mean? I've never had anyone over here. I'm flying my dad out here soon. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, I'm sick of talking to my wife. Do you know what I mean? The only time I get to speak to anyone out externally is you and bloody Brian, maybe Tom Aspinall when he picks up.
So it says here that it's priced out at $5.8 million.
Is that now though or then?
This is June 6th, 2021.
Yeah. Well, I think he spent a lot more than that at the time. Anyway, as you say, that's a lot of friends that he can accommodate. There was a big fight on UFC 275, Singapore. I'll be there. Excited to call that fight. It was going to be Marvin Vettori taking on Robert Whittaker. Robert pulled out with an undisclosed injury, but they've rescheduled it for Paris.
Well, yeah, they're targeting it right now. I don't think the UFC has anything officially announced, but according to a number of different sources and media outlets, it's all but a done deal. And it looks like the UFC's first trip to Paris. It is a fight night, so it's likely going to be headlined by Robert Whittaker versus Marvin Vettori.
No, it's Cyril Gane.
Oh, it is
tied to Uvasa. Yeah, that's going to be the according to what I see online. That's not from official sources at the UFC. But from everything that I see online, Cyril Gane, and that makes sense. He's French. Wow. The first ever UFC event, you want a Frenchman or you want a countryman, regardless of the country that you're in. You want one of your own, if possible, in the main event. And why not? They've got Cyril Gane, one of the top heavyweights. He's got a great style. The French love kickboxing. That's the kind of style that Cyril Gane has. Taito Uvasa. Come on, man. Everyone loves Taito Uvasa. I'm not sure what the sophisticated French red wine quaffing people are going to make out of Taito Uvasa when he's drinking a shoey. Do you know what I mean? But I can't wait to see the bloody reactions because I'll be there. Oh, and it's a fight night, not a pay-per-view.
Yeah. Same thing as the UFC, like, London card.
Yeah.
Can you imagine a champagne shoey?
Gross.
You're very gross.
Gross. Yeah. Champagne's just too sweet. You know what I mean? Don't get me wrong. Champagne's like it's a good buzz. You know what I mean? The buzz of champagne is really good. It's a nice high. It gets you kind of energetic, a little giddy, a little silly. You know what I mean?
Drink too much of it and you have a bad, bad time.
Bad headache. Yes. Doing a champagne shoey or a red wine shoey. I mean, again, that's even worse. A red wine shoey. Oh, God. But anyway, Marvin Vettori, Robert Whittaker. Who do you think wins that? Hamilton, go on. Give me your in-depth analysis.
I mean, my in-depth analysis, the same thing I said heading to the Israel Adesanya fight. Now that Michael Bisping is retired, if Robert Whittaker is fighting someone, I'm picking Robert Whittaker. That's that, right? I think his style is, you know, it's my favorite style to watch in MMA. And I think it's, you know, it's very similar to that, you know, what we were talking about with Oliveira. Well, he'll eat two to give one because his one is just that damn strong. So, you know, I like his chances.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with what you're saying, but Marvin Vettori is no walk in the park for anyone. He's a big, strong, physical dude. Remember those shots that he took against Paulo Costa?
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't take a single step back. I had so much respect for Marvin after that fight for a number of things. But like number one, when Paulo Costa came in and he was 20 pounds heavy, Marvin didn't bitch. He didn't blink an eyelid. You want to fight 205? No problem. You know, and a lot of people would use that to weasel out, to try and get a bigger contract, to get a better, some more money out of the UFC or whatever. Marvin was just like, yeah, whatever. Because Costa looked absolutely gigantic and he was whipping those kicks in. And Marvin just took them all in his stride, carried on walking him down and won a very well-earned decision. And as I say, forever had my respect. Same with Robert. How can you not like Robert Whittaker? I mean, he's just a solid guy. You know what I mean?
Dude, I mean, those wars with Yoel Romero, you know, for every summer for what seemed like an eternity a few years back. I mean, the guy just, he can eat big shots and very similarly just keeps coming forward. There is something about, I just like something about Whittaker's, like, you know, his variety of striking and the way that he pieces together combinations and movement. I just, you know, I do agree. Marvin Vettori is tough as they come. And if you're a bruiser, like, you know, a Sean Strickland or a Paulo Costa, I think you're going to have an issue, you know, with Marvin Vettori, because he's not going to back down from the power. But somebody like Whittaker, you know, who can, you know, hit and move and really just, you know, put on a clinic with the footwork. I think that's going to be a tough thing for Vettori to prepare for.
Yeah. Well, the thing is for Whittaker, when he's preparing for Marvin, predominantly, you're preparing for a striker. Yes, of course, Marvin has takedowns and he's a good grappler. He's got good jiu-jitsu and he was trying to take down Israel Adesanya because that's the way you beat Israel Adesanya. For Robert Whittaker, though, in that fight, I think Marvin would probably stand. I think he'd be very confident in his stand-up ability. You know, I think he'd be confident at getting a knockout. So I think he'll just go out there and kind of kickbox him. Whereas with Robert, you don't really know what you're going to get. He is so well-rounded and he does have that element of surprise. But as I just said, Marvin has takedowns as well. So great fight, great fight. The problem is for both of those guys, they're both coming off losses to Izzy. Obviously, a win over either guy kind of establishes them as the next best person in that division. Excuse me. But does that get them a shot again so soon? I'm not sure if it does. It's like Jan Blachowicz and he just won at the weekend, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? And he wants to fight for the belt. And who knows, maybe he does after Glover. But again, I'm not sure if you win one fight, if that gets you a title shot when you've got a bunch of other people behind you. I'm not trying to take title shots away from anyone, by the way. You know what I mean? I'm just saying, if you work your way up, you become number one contender, then you lose, you're still number one because you've only been beaten by the champ. Does one fight get you a shot again? I just don't know what the right answer to that is.
Well, if your name's Colby Covington, yes, but for any other person on the planet, probably not.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't know. Like, to me, the logical next fight would be, you know, the winner of Paulo Costa versus Luke Rockhold, or the winner of, you know, Sean Strickland versus Alex Bahia. Or, you know, let's be honest, if Bahia gets past Sean Strickland here, he's probably going to get the next title shot now.
Yeah, we should talk about that. Alex, is it Alex? Alex Bahia, yeah. And
I believe that's how it's pronounced.
Yeah, and Strickland. I mean, you got to think, and where is that fight happening? That's happening on a pretty big fight card, right? I think that's on a pay-per-view, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it's 276, maybe?
Yes. And what's the main event on 276?
I believe that's the one that's currently headlined by Volkanovski versus Holloway 3.
Oh, that's right.
I'm checking it right now.
Adesanya Cannonier.
Oh, Adesanya Cannonier and Volkanovski's on that.
That's
one.
It. I was going to say it's a co-main. So Adesanya Cannonier, Volkanovski, Holloway 3. I mean, that's two great fights there.
Strickland versus Pereira.
And you're right. Because if I'm Pereira, who has a knockout over Izzy, in his preferred style of fighting, which is kickboxing, you better bloody believe it. I mean, that would be three in a row. Obviously, got to get through Strickland first. Not an easy thing to do. Strickland's good. Strickland's a great grappler. You don't see it much in the UFC, but the man's got a really, really tricky ground game. But if Pereira can pull it off, for sure he should be calling out the champ, because you got to think that's what the UFC is leaning towards. Of course, what was his first fight? Who did he knock out in that first one? It was a flying knee in New York. Then he followed up with another great victory. three good wins.
It was Andreas Mikulaitis and then Bruno Silva.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what Sean Strickland was. Strickland ranked like
Strickland
five.
Is number four.
Number four. So if he beats him, we could see that. But is it? Of course, you got to get through Jared Cannonier. You can't disregard that. But still, what got us on to this?
Right now, Brunson, Strickland, and Costa are all tied at four right now. The four-way tie. It's three-way tie for number four in the rankings, which is just odd to me.
Yeah, no, it is. I'll tell you what's odd. I'll tell you what else is odd, Harrington.
What's that?
The way you phrased number eight in the notes.
Oh, okay.
Says, Paul Daly would be down to come out of retirement for just two fights, both rematches, either Nick Diaz or Jorge Masvidal. He just fought last week.
Uh-huh.
He would be down to come out of retirement. I mean, that's going to be the shortest. I mean, it's just the way you phrased it. You know, you'd say he would contemplate taking another fight would be a better way of putting it. He literally just fought less than a week ago. Less than a week. You're like, you make it sound like it's George St. Pierre or me or someone like that that's been retired for a long time. Chuck the Iceman Liddell would be considered coming out of retirement. Paul Daly. His hands are still probably sore from knocking out his last opponent. You know what I mean? And yeah, listen, Paul Daly, shout out, by the way. Amazing career, great guy, unbelievable fighter, knockout power. Yeah, why not? Rematch with Masvidal and Nick Diaz. I'd love to see both of them.
Yeah, I mean, he got the win over Masvidal, so he'd be, you know, just it would be a chance for Masvidal to get that one back. Nick Diaz, you know, who knows what his future is in combat sports, but I mean, certainly, a noted fight, a noted win in or noted loss in Paul Daly's career. So I'm sure he wants to get that one back.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. Of course, we've got fights this weekend, Harrington. Ooh. What have we got? It's Holly Holm taking on Ketlin Vieira, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm super excited for this one.
Go on then. What are you so excited about?
What I'm excited about is, you know, it's like a weird...
By the way, that sounded awful. That sounded awful. What are you so excited about? No, of course you're excited. No, I get that. That's not what I meant. That sounded really bad. I meant, you know, of course, Holly Holm, former champion, former boxing world champion, if I'm not mistaken, had a great career. Ketlin Vieira. I mean, this is a pivotal match in the bantamweight division, but go on. What piques your interest?
Well, I mean, there's like some weird, you know, MMA math stuff involved here, right? And that always intrigues me. So like Holly Holm has the win over Irene Aldana. Ketlin Vieira lost to Irene Aldana, but has a win over Miesha Tate, who took Holly Holm's belt. So it's like anytime you have, you know, that there where, you know, it is a true styles make fights kind of thing on paper. It's, I don't know, just fun to me.
Yeah, yeah. Today we are welcoming back IP Vanish VPN to the show. You know the deal. IP Vanish has been a longtime sponsor of ours, so it's so great to have them back. And let me tell you about IP Vanish. If you care about the security of your online activity, and you really should, the easiest way to protect yourself is with IP Vanish VPN. Rated 4 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot, IP Vanish provides an encrypted connection for all of your internet traffic, helping to prevent websites, Wi-Fi providers, or even hackers from intercepting your data. You know, we're talking all your financial details, personal information, online activity is completely safe from threats with IP Vanish. Okay, you're not going to get hacked. You're not going to have people logging into your bank account, people hacking your Instagram, your social media, and all that stuff, and changing your passwords and blackmailing you. Believe me, that stuff goes on. Okay, IP Vanish eradicates all of that. And also, if you're in other countries, you can maybe access certain pornographic websites. What do I know? But still, get started. If you're in Abu Dhabi, trust me, it's going to come in handy. Get started with this limited time offer and save 50% off your monthly and annual subscriptions by going to ipvanish.com/believe. 50% off, ladies and gentlemen. One more time, that is ipvanish.com/believe. And that's all lowercase, by the way. Okay, where were we? I like the co-main event as well. Michelle Pereira, Santiago Ponzinibbio. Love watching that guy fight. Santiago Ponzinibbio, I mean, I see him there at the Apex because he does the Spanish language commentary, Spanish language news team. Assemble. What movie is that?
Anchorman.
Yeah. He's awesome. I love him. He's such a great guy. But inside the octagon, he's a nasty man. He really is. Love his style. Love the way he fights. Michelle Pereira, same thing. You know what I mean? He's a little unorthodox, but he's kind of moving away from that crazy style a little bit. You know what I mean? Because it's all well and good when you can go out there and knock people out, doing the backflips and being the show pony. It's amazing. But when you start moving up the rankings and the fights start getting a little bit tougher, you're going to be a little bit more orthodox in your approach. You can't be wasting energy. And I think he's learned a little bit. But yeah, Pereira versus Santiago, great fight. Oh, even odds. Very even odds.
Well, it's even. It's even for Ponzinibbio. Pereira is the slight favorite. Did you see, by the way, that Pereira has, like, he's left everything behind and he's just gone to a farm. He does all of his training like on like a real farm, like where he just has to, you know, like herd cows and do like it's he's gone like almost like Rocky IV style, right? Like he's just in a barn training for all of his fights now, and he's on a win streak since he's moved out there.
Really? I have not seen that. There's got to be a boxing ring. There's got to be a punch bag. He's not just, what did you say, herding cows? I would have thought more like lifting hay bales and stuff like
sure.
that.
Yeah. All that stuff.
Glistening in the sun, sweating, wiping his brow, looking all shiny and glossy and muscular. That's your that's what you're seeing in your head right now, Harrington. I know it is. Yeah, no, yeah. I didn't see that, mate. I didn't see it. Brian, we got any questions? What do we have, bud?
We do have a couple of questions today. But before we get to that, Harrington, you want to do some plugs?
I would love to, and talk to people about, you know, if you're listening on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you find podcasts, make sure that you're subscribed to the show. And if you could, at the bottom there, leave us a 5-star rating, positive review. It really helps the show out. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you're subscribed to the channel and you got that notification bell click so you find out whenever a new video comes out. And if you want to catch over 300, oh, at this point, almost 400 episodes, you can't find anywhere else, head on over to gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the promo code BYM. Get yourself a 7-day free trial.
All right, Bri.
All right.
Got? Remember, bympod@gmail.com. If you got the questions, we like to answer them.
You know, that's the most prevalent DM I get. How do I send a question to the show?
And we literally say it on every single episode. bympod@gmail.com. Working on merch, by the way, as well. So stay tuned for that announcement. Well, Brian, what do we have, my friend?
All right. So we got a question here from Mr. Lee Bosworth.
Hello, Believe You Me. First time I sent a question in. Thanks to Harrington. So my question is, do you think that the fighter should weigh in on the morning of the fight? You're seeing fighters like Usman weighing at 170, and then by the time of the fight, they're probably about 185, 186, close to 200 pounds. Seen this plenty lately. We've seen Justin Gaethje, who was probably an hour, 2 hours after the fight, weighing 168. Do you think that the fighters are probably weighing a bit earlier, or do you think they're given far too much time to probably rehydrate and get to these like higher weights? Because sometimes you do see mismatches in the same divisions and it doesn't seem right. Or do you think it means that we need another weight class, maybe 165s and so on? Thanks for the question. And yeah, Tales of the Octagon in October, Mike.
Oh, nice one. I will see you there. MyTicket.co.uk. Tales from the Octagon going all over the UK, Europe, Australia, New Zealand. But anyway, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to answer that question. What was his name again?
Lee.
Lee. How are you, man? Thanks, Lee. I'll see you there, mate. All right, Pat. Probably going to be Newcastle, I would have thought, you know. Yeah, listen, I understand what he's saying, Neil. Sometimes you do see some what appear to be mismatches. Sometimes you look at a fight and one guy is clearly way bigger than the other one. Excuse me. Pardon me. They're allowed to manipulate. They are. It's what they can do right now. And the way... I mean, I understand what you're saying. Should they weigh in on the morning, the day of the fight, or things like that? The problem is that then becomes unsafe because there's no rule that they can't cut weight on that day. And if they cut weight on that day, then, of course, the brain hasn't had a chance to, you know, be protected by the spinal fluid that it's, you know, that it's kind of floating in. You know, when you get hit in the face, you get hit hard enough, it's that fluid that the brain sits in that protects it from hitting the skull. But if the brain does hit the skull, that's when the lights go out, you know? And when you dehydrate yourself majorly, it affects your ability to take a shot. And it also affects your ability for your brain to recover or increases the liability for brain damage. And I just think by having them weighing on the day, it's just going to get more dangerous. It's going to become unsafe. Now, granted, the current method, I think there's flaws to that as well. There's definitely flaws. People push it to the extremes, but there's a give and a take with that. You know what I mean? A lot of people, if you go through extreme weight cuts as the fight progresses, you're going to be tired. You know, you're going to fatigue at a way faster rate than what you would normally. If you just walk on the scale, then you could perform normally. When you get tired, you get tired. When you go through those strenuous weight cuts where you literally almost kill yourself, then you will tire quicker. Simple as that. So there is a give and take. However, if they can get the job done before they get tired, they're going to be 15, 20 pounds heavier, significantly stronger. The techniques are better. They will hit harder, you know, so on and so forth. Maybe not the techniques better. That's stupid. But you know what I mean? The techniques will be more effective because they're stronger. That's what I meant. But yeah, yeah. I don't know what's going to happen with this whole weight cutting shenanigans.
I'd say the opposite. Let them weigh in on like Tuesday or Wednesday of that week and actually give them the time to recover from what is that's a grueling thing. Right, you guys are nearly killing yourselves before you get in there, right?
Like, you're out of your mind.
Why?
Because if they weighed in on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, we would see this accentuated. The problem would become even bigger. People would, I mean, there's only so far you can push it. I mean, who was it? Charles Oliveira couldn't get another thing out of his body. And that is a part of it. There comes a time, I've never experienced it, but I have heard with enough people that I've done weight cuts with, speaking to wrestlers and, of course, fighters, there comes a point where it seems that the body just shuts down and cannot give up any more fluid or, you know, liquid, whatever. So there's only so far you can push it before you die, you know. But you do see that. Brian, just look this up, the amount of deaths from weight cutting, because it is a real thing. Around the world, it's happened. Fortunately, so far, the UFC, we haven't seen a death yet. But it does happen, and a lot of it's going to be attributed to the weight cuts, I believe, you know. And weighing in on a Tuesday, as I was saying, I think that's just going to make it worse, Harrington.
Well, I mean, there's something about that, like you said, just how messed up these guys are getting. You know, being there, being in that place just the day before you have to go and perform at your absolute athletic peak that you've been training 6, 8, 12 weeks ahead of the time for, it just doesn't. There's something about that that's always felt very unfair to me. So the second part of what I was going to say would be, you know, clock in at the beginning of training camp, right? And show that you're gradually, like, you have guys coming out for USADA anyway, just bring a scale, right? And check in with these guys and track their progressions through camp to make sure that guys aren't gaming the system. There should be upper limits for where you can be at when you sign a contract to fight at 155. You can't actually be a guy who walks around at 215. That seems crazy to me.
So I'm not getting a list of all the people who have died from cutting weight, but I am just seeing a bunch of stories about it. There's a story here from The Sun where two guys died. Somebody died in China. Like, it seems like a pretty common occurrence.
Yeah. No, it is. It's a thing. I've been there. When I've cut weight before, I have felt on the verge of death. I swear to God. I remember, multiple occasions, I was trying to think where I was, but there's no point pinpointing one time. When I've pushed it and I'm on weight, I remember lying down with my sauna suit on and just the heat coming off my body and my heart just fucking beating at a crazy rate, you know. And Brady was like, "Mike, fucking, I think you've got a heat stroke. You might die." You know what I mean? It's bad. It's bad. And that's what they do routinely. And that's what and we've had this conversation before, but it blows my mind. You wrap yourself up in cotton wool. You baby yourself. You treat your body like a temple. You work out every day 2-3 times. You follow a strict diet. You're up at the crack of dawn. You're getting early nights. You're abstaining from alcohol. You know, you're doing all this stuff. And then the day before the fight, you almost kill yourself. It just seems so counterproductive. However, to what you're saying, Harrington, people always look for a shortcut. People are always going to try and look for a ways to win. And what you're talking about, they did try and implement that. I think in California, they brought it in for a short amount of time where within X amount of days, I forget what it was. I think within 2 weeks or something, you had to be within, you were only allowed to be 20% over. You know what I mean? So let's say it was 185, 10% would be 10% would be £18. Well, that can't be right. Maybe it was 10%. Maybe it was you had to be 10% over your body weight. I don't know. Whatever it was, there was a percentage. I'm not sure off the top of my head. But again, I understand what they're doing there. But on that day, people could just cut weight again. Do you understand what I'm saying? So the whole thing can just become a charade. Obviously, if you're a righteous person. Now, if you're flying by the rules and you don't cheat or look to game the system or whatever, but people do. It's professional sports. And if it's not illegal, you know what I mean? If it's not forbidden in the rule book, then you're not doing any harm. And all you're doing is contributing to potentially more injuries and, as Brian said, people dying. There's no right answer here. Just everyone should just move up a fucking weight class, in my opinion.
Well, so there was one other thing he said in there, and this struck me during the Hebos versus Chukagan fight on Saturday. The 160,
which fight again?
I always call her Chukagan, and I get called an idiot for it. Caitlin Chukagan.
There you go.
Amanda Hebos. I'm not even going to try anymore. But here's my thinking, right? Amanda Hebos, she kind of stalled out a little bit on her quest to become like a top strawweight, right? She lost like a couple key fights there, but she's still very talented. There's still like a ton of talent there, and she's not in a position to be a gatekeeper. Still very young. She goes up to flyweight and puts an absolute, like, you know, she puts one hell of a fight on the current number one contender. And it's like, I look at how talented 115 was and how talented 135 was at the time. And 125 is a supernatural weight class. And yeah, you do see a little bit more movement between the weight classes now that there is between 125. There's something between 115 and 135. But it's like there's enough talent in at 125 and 135 to fill that division. There's certainly enough talent to fill a 165-pound division without diminishing the talent pool at either 155 or 170. So why not?
Yeah, well, I don't know why. The why not is on the 165. Dana seems against that. I don't think I've seen him elaborate to the press why not. Maybe you know, makes the other talent pools a little shallow. I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. But then on the flip side to what I was talking before about people, you know, cutting weight to get an advantage, but again, it can slow them down as the fight progresses and all the rest of it. At the end of the day, it comes down to free will and what your approach is. And if that's the way you want to do it and that's the way you want to approach it, then, of course, as I said before, you're not breaking any rules. You know what I mean? I guess some people might say it's cheating, but it's not, because you are making a sacrifice. You know what I mean? If you have to make that weight, you have to take or shed all that, those pounds. You know, as I said, it does affect you. It does affect you. You know, towards the end of my career, the last few fights, in fact, the first time I did it, was when I fought Rockhold. So right at the end of my career, pretty much, I started having workouts on the day of the fight because it dawned. Yeah. And it was actually John Jones. I used to see John Jones doing this, and this inspired me. You would see John day of the fight down at a river or something, having a little workout, soaking up the natural energy, whatever. But he'd be hitting pads and stuff as well. And I thought, yeah, I want to try that. If it's good enough for the greatest of all time, or one of the perceived goals, then maybe it's good for me. And it totally makes sense, because your body, you go through all this, you know, you wrap your body in cotton wool, you treat it like a temple, as I said. Then you go through this weight cut. You don't want the first time you run the engine to be when you're in the octagon. You know what I mean? Because you do feel that. And I was feeling that in the locker room. You know, and when you're hitting pads, you're like, Jesus Christ, a couple of days ago, I was hitting pads and I felt great. All of a sudden, now I'm hitting pads in the locker room and I feel really tired. And it's like, well, yeah, this is the first time you ran the engine since you fucking almost killed yourself. So that's why I would get out of bed on a Saturday morning, have my breakfast, let that settle, then go have a little workout. Nothing crazy, nothing strenuous. Couple of minute rounds on the pads, a little bit of grappling, just open the lungs momentarily for a little bit and then go try and take another nap. And at least then you kind of, the engine's used to running back on normal again without this crazy shock to the system, you know? But anyway, the whole point of the question is, and it's a good question because we've rambled on for 20 fucking minutes about it. If you give a step on the scale at the contracted weight, I guess however you fucking get there, that's down to you, you know?
And any earlier, like any closer to the fight is insane.
Yeah, no, of course, Harrington, you don't want to bring it any closer. I mean, the weigh-ins used to be at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, and that used to be I mean, I was very excited when they brought it in at 9 o'clock because, again, what's that? Three? That's 7 hours. That's an extra 7 hours of rehydration. And it doesn't sound like a lot of 9 till 4 p.m. and you're cutting weight. Oh, man, it was bloody miserable. Anyway, we've bored you long enough for the weight cut discussion. Brian, what else we got, buddy?
All right.
You know, I swear to you, I just want to quit. I got a DM from somebody who was like, you know what was so interesting? Listening to Mike and Anthony talk about weight cutting on Monday. And then, you know, they stopped talking about that cool thing to talk about Madonna's vagina. And I was like, keep talking about weight cutting. So there you go, man. 10 minutes.
Madonna's vagina is a very important topic. Okay. Right.
All right. So we got one more here and it's from Marco Uzlek.
Oh, Marco.
What's up, BYM crew? Marco from Miami again. I have one question for all four of you. Give me two fighters which you would like that they're in the same weight class and you would like to see that fight. So let's say, for example, I would like to see Merab Dereshvili versus Islam Makhachev if they're in the same weight class. So something like that. Which two fighters you wish that they're in the same weight class so they could fight? See you.
Yeah. Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson versus Francis Ngannou. That is the fight that we've all been waiting to see. Do you know what I mean? Go on, Brian. Harrington, two fighters.
I mean, all time, the one I think everybody wanted to see, the one that I wanted to see and people were, you know, were expecting was going to happen forever and ever, Anderson Silva versus GSP.
You actually bring up a really good one. That is the fight that got away.
I was also going to use an Anderson Anderson and John Jones, I would have liked to see fight.
There was another one. There was they flirted with that for a little bit. There was a couple of scenes of them, like, you know, like toy fighting and whatnot. But yeah, okay. I would go with George St. Pierre and Anderson Silva. That was the one. It was talked about as well. Kind of a shame that never happened. But still, that's the show. We went we wasted a bit of time today.
A little short. We're fine.
It's a little shorter, but whatever. We're all good. I've missed meetings. Tom Aspinall and his lousy connection messing us up. Do you know what I mean? Shame on Tom. Harrington, well done. Brian, well done. You guys, well done. Do us a favor, subscribe, ring the bell if you haven't done that. And we will be back on Monday with a roundup of all the news. Guests, Anthony Smith will be back. And I will start looking at Harrington's non-MMA subjects before we discuss. Anyway, take care. Enjoy your weekends.